8:01 on a dark, dank, dreary Saturday morning, but we'll brighten things up. You are in the zone on The Fan. I am Dave Sinekin, joined as always by my partner, the professor of hoopology, Gopher legend, NBA champion, Double T, Trent Tucker, in the house. Good morning, partner.
Good morning, Davey.
How we doing?
Things are good. How are things on your end?
All is well.
Yeah?
All is well. It's not a beautiful day for the Tour de Tonka bike race, which I drove around and through on my way to the studio this morning.
That's true. It still looks like it's early evening.
It feels like it, doesn't it? Yeah, it's dark out there. It looks like we're kind of in for a washout of a day today.
Okay.
For the most part. Twins play tonight, I believe.
Had a good game last night.
Yeah, I watched a good chunk of that. I wanted to see the new pitcher, Tyler Molly, get his first start. And was off. He, nice start, then started serving up dingers, and things got a little dicey.
Well, you know, going into the ninth inning, had a one-run lead. You know, Lopez was pitching very well, but he gave up three singles, you know, there in the top of the ninth. But the Twins' opposition did just enough in terms of making enough mistakes to give them a chance to win that game in extra innings.
Indeed. Blue Jays tied in the ninth off of Lopez. Was that his first appearance with the Twins? Did he get an inning in before that? I felt like that would may have been his debut with the Twins.
I'm not sure if it was the first one. I mean, he pitched well. I mean, you know, those three singles and, you know, and the last one was just kind of a bloop single in the center field with two outs. You know, that on any contact, the runner is off on contact. They had no chance at the plate to get him out. But, you know, but they was able to hang in there, you know, get into extra innings, got some good pitching to make sure to keep the game in a situation where they could win. And it was not a pretty win, but a good win indeed.
Yeah, I took advantage of some sloppy defense by the Blue Jays there in the 10th inning. Just a routine ground ball that was not handled.
Yeah.
And opened the door. I'm bitter still about international rules and extra innings. It feels so gimmicky to me. Like, all right, if we get to the 15th inning, at that point, all right, everyone's tired, pitching staff's getting abused, let's just move it along. But why do we have to start right away? Let's just play baseball. Let's play a 10th inning like the 9th inning. Just keep going.
Right.
But they don't, we know. And Twins got the win, get the W last night, they increased their lead to 2 games on a week where they did make moves. We were, you know, like everybody, theorizing last Saturday what would the Twins do? Would they add some arms? And they did. They obviously helped out the starting staff. They helped out the bullpen. Both those guys involved last night, up and down efforts, I'd say, for both. And the Twins are just kind of plugging along and trying to kind of...
5 or 6 games now by 500?
Yeah, and I think the lead now, 2. I think Cleveland lost last night. Okay. So the Twins' lead is 2 games. And then the news yesterday was they moved on from Tyler Duffy, longtime member of the pitching staff, designated for assignment yesterday after a struggle a previous night. And so it looks like his tenure with the Twins is now over. But a W for the Twins, which was good to see. They'll go at it again at Target Field this evening. We have plenty to get to. We're still in the abyss. We get it. Another month or so once we turn the page. Well, once we get to the fair here at the end of the month, then you can almost smell football. You know, then you know, and training camps for the NBA won't be far behind. We'll be right back in business. This month, you know, we're all kind of twiddling our thumbs. It's summer. It's beautiful, you know, lakes and all that. But there's football happening. You know, we're getting closer and closer. An actual game was played the other night.
A lot of news in football as well.
And plenty of news. And we're going to get to a lot of that. A lot of quarterback stuff I want to get to with you. A lot of quarterbacks either in new places or young quarterbacks facing a lot of pressure, and I've got some talkers with you we'll get to today for sure, and the latest on the purple, of course, and NBA news. And I want to start with that, Double T, because it was just a day or two following our show that we heard the news that Bill Russell had passed away at the age of 88. I'm too young to remember him as a player. I remember him as a coach, as a broadcaster, and certainly as a guy who championed social justice from, you know, the moment of birth until the moment he passed away. But we've talked about Bill Russell over the years. I just want to get your thoughts on the man and then sort of tell the kids a little bit about, you know, what made him different, what made him special, you know, beyond, you know, some of the big highlights that everybody knows about, the 11 championships, the 5 MVPs, the defense, all that stuff. What do you think of when you think of Bill Russell?
Well, you know, he had the right temperament, but also he was true and honest, you know, with himself. and who he was as a man and as a person. You know, he stuck to his core values. And sometimes when a person sticks to their core values, it may rub someone else the wrong way. And in doing the time that he came up, you know, there were a lot of things that he had to fight against. And he knew that if he stuck to his true self, you know, some of the consequences could be harsh, not only for him, but for his family and his teammates as well. You know, but he was a man of conviction. And the one thing I've always said, at some point in time in life, you know, you're going to be asked to be a man. And sometimes when you're asked to be a man, the consequences may not be the best on the other side. But at the end of the day, if you're honest with yourself, if you know you did all the right things that you could do to better yourself and the people around you, you can live with that.
No doubt. What a life he lived, and a time, you know, when he was coming out of college in the mid-50s. I learned some things. I didn't realize he was like the world's second best high jumper when he was in college. Didn't get any D1 offers outside of San Francisco. He didn't play a lot of basketball until he was in his, you know, teenage years. And basketball was such a different game back then that he was coached not to leave his feet. Like, he should keep his feet planted on the ground and never jump. And that was how he was taught to defend until he got to college. And they said, what, you know, what are you talking about? And he really transformed the game from a defensive standpoint and just swatting things away, and not just swatting balls into the stands. But you always see the highlights of Bill Russell tipping the balls to his teammates and starting fast breaks. And, you know, really the first star black player, the first black head coach, and, you know, going to a city like Boston back then. And, you know, with Red Auerbach forming a team of all black players, they were the first NBA team that featured five black starters in a city. Let's just say that was not particularly racially tolerant back then. And, you know, we'd like to think things have improved, but back then it was a big deal. And so that was always at the forefront of who Bill Russell was, kind of a pioneer. And, you know, his legendary battles with Will Chamberlain. I would love to have seen those guys in the late 50s, early 60s going at it. And Russell got the better of him, I think, 7 out of 8 times in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But you look at his career, and he's thought of by many as the greatest team sport player of all time, because he won championships in college. He won the gold medal. He goes to Boston, wins virtually every year. And it's not like they had, yes, they had all Hall of Famers around him, but would they have all been Hall of Famers had Russell not shown up to sort of make everybody around him better? It was quite a career.
No, maybe not, you know, but, you know, the one thing that I can remember, you know, him saying to me when I first got into the league, I had a chance to, you know, to sit down and chat with him a few times. He said he had a certain role that he had to play for the Boston Celtics, and he knew what his role was. And he left his scoring up to other guys, you know, Sam Jones, John Havlicek, you know, Bob Cousy and them did their things. But he knew what he had to do to make this team better, you know, blocking shots, rebounding, running the floor, you know, being that anchor, a last line of defense, you know, to allow these guys to do what they did best so that the team could flourish and come together. And for someone, you know, to understand exactly, you know, what they meant to a team. And he was the leader of the team, but he was willing to sacrifice, you know, so that the team could be better. And that's why, you know, the Boston Celtics during that time became true champions, because everyone was willing to sacrifice. And, you know, just to sit down and spend some time and to hear him talk about, you know, playing against Wilt Chamberlain and what it was like, and how he had to really, really get himself psyched up because he was playing against perhaps the most dominant figure to ever play the game of basketball.
Yeah, no doubt. I found it really interesting, too, that he decided early in his career he was not going to sign autographs. Like, he thought that was a waste of time. Who needs my name on a piece of paper? He said, I'm just as happy smiling and shaking somebody's hand and hope that that is meaningful to somebody. And that's just not something you hear from star athletes, to just be that thoughtful about it. Like, just, you know, think about what you've got there. What does that mean? Look me in the eye, shake my hand, and smile. That's going to be a much better interaction in the long run. You know, so, and he got, you know, that was his deal. Like, if you've got a Bill Russell autograph, man,
that was huge.
That's huge, because he's pretty much stopped in his mid-20s and said, I just don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, he was fun. You know, he was fun to talk to, and during the times when he was the commentator, I think, for CBS, and, you know, going into the old Boston Garden. And as a kid growing up, you know, I was a huge Boston Celtics fan because that was the only team that I got a chance to see on Sunday afternoon. It was either the Boston Celtics against the Philadelphia 76ers or the Boston Celtics against the L.A. Lakers. And so as a kid, only having three channels to watch during that time, ABC, NBC, and CBS, you know, the Boston Celtics, they were the only team that you had a chance to see on a weekly basis. And so you became a Boston Celtic fan. And the way they played the game, that's how you wanted to play the game. There was guys that you say, hey, one day I hope to grow up and be this guy. And my favorite all the time, you know, Boston Celtics player was Sam Jones. You know, Sam Jones was the guy that could, he could shoot off the dribble, he could shoot the jump shot. And as a kid who wanted to be a guard, you know, he was the one guy that I looked up to, along with Walt Clyde Frazier. But the guy that really set the tone, you know, not only for the Boston Celtics and for the rest of the NBA, was Bill Russell.
You know, you throw around retiring numbers a lot, and it almost gets to a point where it becomes less meaningful. You know, obviously baseball with Jackie Robinson, that's, you know, one of the very few numbers you're going to see retired. There's been some talk about retiring number six, which, you know,
it's
would hurt.
It's a great number, right?
It is a great number. And you wore it really well. You did. I don't know. I guess I don't know that that's something that is needed to be done, but it's not just about Bill Russell, the player. It's Bill Russell, the human being, right, and the ambassador and everything else. It's not just what he did during his career, but all these years after. Where are you on that subject of permanently retiring numbers? It's something you have to be really, really careful about and do it very, very infrequently.
I don't think anyone in yesterday's game or today's game would have a problem with that. I don't think anyone would have a problem with that. I would be okay with that. I would. That's what Bill Russell meant to the game.
And that was your number, which makes it a little special, too, that you wore that number well.
Nobody can ever wear it again, right?
And you didn't wear it necessarily to honor Bill. You were the sixth player drafted, right?
Yeah,
that was the number.
You know, I really wanted to wear number 32, but the Knicks told me at that time that they were going to retire number 32 because it was somebody, maybe Lucas from Ohio State.
Why do I have Dick Barnett in my head?
Dick Barnett was number 12.
12? Okay.
Yeah.
I got the two part right.
So that's why, because I would have worn number 32.
Yeah, because you wore that well in maroon and gold, for sure.
Right, yeah. But then number six just popped up. Number six, Dr. J had number six. He was a friend of mine, and also Bill Russell.
And you were the sixth guy drafted. Right. It all kind of made sense.
Yeah.
It all worked out well. Yeah. A big loss for the NBA community, the loss of Bill Russell at the age of 88. Magnificent life lived. And for the youngsters that, you know, have just seen grainy videos of him, it's worth your time to do a deeper dive into what that man was all about beyond what he did between the lines. We'll pause here, come back. Got a lot of other NBA stuff to get to with Double T, including a rumored three-way deal involving the Lakers, Jazz, and Knicks. The Wolves add another player. A couple teams are under investigation in the NBA, and lots of NFL stuff to get to over these next 2 hours. Glad to have you along for the ride. We are just getting started.
Yes.
On a Saturday morning, you're in the zone. Tucker, Sinekin, and somewhat Brett Blakemore, whose eyes are peeled on Premier League soccer today, and we're just kind of a annoyance that he has to deal with.
He's checking out soccer instead of the NHL to see what the new draftees are doing.
Well, I think there's actual soccer being played right now.
That's the key. There's nothing else going. If there was, you know, Packers football being played, I'd be watching that too.
You're not watching Family Night highlights from last night?
No, I saw it on Instagram. That's about as much as
all right,
I need.
Very good. We're with you till 10 o'clock, as usual.
It's some rumbling now, sir.
Yes, it's stormy. There's no question. We were with you till 10. The exciting news is, following us today, it's the 2022 debut of Fantasy Football Weekly. Charch and his minions, I'm not sure which guys are with him for the opening show, but they begin anew. Once again, Fantasy Football Weekly returns. Following us now for the through December, I guess, till the season ends. So stay tuned for that. And then following Fantasy Football Weekly, it's Saturdays with Sauce. Meet Sauce and Nordo live from Vikings training camp for all the latest on what's going on at Vikings training camp. You know, we were talking a week ago. I was of the opinion that Irv Smith is one of the most important players on this team with the new offense and not a whole lot of proven depth behind him. And then sure enough, he goes down with an injury this past week, a thumb injury that will keep him out reportedly of through training camp, through the preseason, and they hope to have him back for week one against Green Bay. But obviously, you just don't know. Well, you just hope that that thing gets taken care of.
It's not too bad.
No, it could be much worse, and it's not a lower appendage where you got to really worry. It's just, you know, a thumb. You throw some dirt on it and put some tape on it, and let's go.
He's still train and condition to keep himself in shape and stuff like that. So
he just start to worry. I think he's a free agent after this year, so this is a big year for him. It's a big year for the Vikings to evaluate him. And as we said, we believe he's going to be a big part of this offense. And just not much proven on the roster behind him. Okay. So nice opportunities for the youngsters that are going to get a whole lot of playing time. But so that's, again, I think from all the reports I've read, the Vikes have been hit by injuries very little so far. You know, I think they only started the preseason with one or two players on the pup list.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, Green Bay, I think, had 11 on the pup list to start preseason. So we talk about it all the time. This is just a death march through August to just stay as healthy as possible. We've seen some key players already get lost for the season on other teams, and you just try to dodge those mines as you go and be as healthy as you can on September 11th.
That's true.
We are just, 5 weeks or so away from the start. And the Vikings' first preseason game, I believe, is next Sunday. I think it is. It's not. Yeah, I think it's Saturday or Sunday next weekend. So this is the last weekend without Vikings football, except for bye week, you know, through into January. That's always a good thing to just kind of consider. I know it always makes my wife a little sick that football's back, and she loses a good chunk of me for a while. But, we are just on the verge, and we have lots of football stuff to get to. Mostly we'll do that in the 9 o'clock hour today. Let's catch up on some NBA, Double T. The Wolves added another player this week.
Are they at 16 now?
I think they are at 16, and I think basically, they've signed a player to compete for the last roster spot, which I'm all for. Let's create as much competition as possible. They signed C.J. Ellaby.
C.J. Ellaby.
Who you may or may not remember. Okay.
I heard the name from somewhere.
Yep, second-round pick by the Blazers, and he's out of Washington State, 6'6". He ended up starting 28 games last year after Dame went down.
Okay.
So he got a good run with Portland. I know I read some of the reports out of Portland that some observers were surprised the Blazers did not retain him for the next season. I saw some comparisons to kind of maybe a little bit more offensively capable Josh Okogie, like a guy that really plays defense hard, big wingspan, rebounds the ball, defends.
Did he shoot a little bit?
Yeah, he shot like 27% from three, so he needs some work on the three. But he signed an Exhibit 10 contract, which is...
A who?
Yeah, that's kind of what I did too. Exhibit 10.
I never heard of that before.
No, that can turn into a two-way contract.
Okay.
So
Exhibit
10. It sounds very official.
It does.
He'll be competing with Nathan Knight for that last roster spot. It also gives you protection with injuries, obviously. But just surprising to me that a guy that's been in the league a couple years, he was the 46th, I think, pick in 2020, that started almost half the season for Portland.
And now he's on Exhibit 10.
Yeah, so now he doesn't even earn a roster spot.
Can you give us a little bit more detail of what that means, Exhibit 10?
Well, I didn't write a whole lot of notes about it, to be honest with you, just that he has nothing guaranteed.
Okay.
There's not a spot for him.
So there's no guaranteed contract, and he has to make the team.
Correct.
An Exhibit 10 is a single-season minimum salary NBA deal that allows a franchise to convert the contract to a two-way deal as long as the change is made prior to the beginning of the regular season. So it's basically a veteran minimum.
Well, I speak for all of us. Thanks for tearing your eyes away from soccer for a second to help us out with that.
Yeah.
I'm
listening.
Very nice.
I'm here.
So you know, we know what a two-way is. That's where you're playing G League, you're playing with the team, you get X number of games with the big club, but it's not an official roster spot. So
you have a chance.
You have a chance. And I think, you know, big picture, it's just getting really competitive on this roster. I mean, we know they gave up a whole lot of players to acquire Rudy Gobert, but I think They filled that cupboard very capably.
They got 16 now.
They got 16 back. But just looking at, you know, the Kyle Anderson, the Bryn Forbes, you know, bringing back Nathan Knight, Austin Rivers, you know, just bringing in some capable guys that have proven to be really nice role players and filling
spots.
But
that's what they lost. I mean, it's not like they lost core players. They lost role players. And so now you've gone out and identified those role players who you think that can come in and replace the guys that you got rid of, and they can help your team more.
Exactly.
It's a good deal.
It is a good deal. And, you know, I think the front office has identified the needs, and I think they did a nice job. I really think the Bryn Forbes signing is one I'm going to be watching carefully because I've watched him a lot when he was on Milwaukee and saw what a nice piece he can be off the bench and give this team maybe what they lost.
The Spurs organization, right?
Yep, Spurs as well before that. But can give you some of maybe what Malik Beasley gave you, you know, in being a great, you know, long-distance shooter. That's just not a whole lot of talent in that regard on this roster. So I think there's an opportunity for him there. Other NBA news I want to get to, Double T. The Lakers and LeBron have been chatting about an extension. He is eligible for a two-year, $97.1 million deal. Most believe he's going to sign a one-year deal for $47 with a player option for the year after that. He'll be 38, I think, and he's made it clear that his goal, you're LeBron James, there's not a whole lot of goals left.
He's playing with his kids.
He wants to play with Bronny. And Bronny is, I think, a year away from being eligible to be an NBA player.
Okay.
Whether he's the kind of guy that would be, you know, drafted right away, I don't know. But you know, if his name was Jim Jones, that probably not.
Right.
But that's LeBron's dream. That is to somehow team up with his kids, whether that's in LA or somewhere else. I think we all believe
it'd be the first time in NBA history, wouldn't it?
Father and son, I believe so. Yes.
On the lines of Ken Griffey Sr. and Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah, we've seen it a few times.
Bobby Bonds and Barry Bonds.
Did they play together, though?
I don't think they played together.
I don't think so.
I think the Griffies played together.
That's possible.
I think they didn't see out, didn't they?
That sounds right.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure Bobby was done well before Barry was playing.
Bobby was good.
I was a big Bobby Bonds guy when I was a kid.
Baseball
yeah,
player.
He was great. No, I'm pretty sure it's never happened in the NBA. I don't think it's ever happened in the NHL, but I would have no way of knowing for sure. Anybody?
Because
NHL
Howell,
father and
yes,
son?
They weren't good enough to make it.
Probably not.
Because Gordie Howe played long enough. If he had kids who were good enough to play, you know, they could have played together.
His grandkids could have played with him. He was playing into his 50s, wasn't he?
Right, yeah.
I would say Tom Brady's getting close, but I don't think his kids are old enough. But he'll be 45 when the season starts. So LeBron and the Lakers are trying to figure things out. Meanwhile, the Lakers, Jazz and Knicks have reportedly been talking about a deal that would ship a couple of superstars around. The deal would be
the Lakers, Jazz, and Knicks. Okay.
Yep. The deal would be Westbrook would go to Utah, and then they would buy him out. They want nothing to do with Russell Westbrook. They're kind of starting over. So Russell Westbrook goes to Utah. Donovan Mitchell ends up with the Knicks, and the Lakers would acquire two guys from a group of guys like Beverly, Beasley, Bogdanovich, Jordan Clarkson, like pick your two guys, and the Jazz would get a whole lot of draft picks from the Knicks mostly, and then some from the Lakers as well. So the Knicks basically would give up maybe a player. They'd probably have to dump salary like Derrick Rose and another player or two, but mostly they're giving up draft picks to acquire Donovan Mitchell in a deal like that. And Utah just bottoms out and says, Russ, thanks for playing. Go find yourself a home. We've got nothing, and we're starting from scratch. So
I mean, in terms of buying out Russell Westbrook, knowing that you don't want him, what Russ says, no, I'm not taking less than, what was he making, 47?
Let's go with it. It's close to
give
that.
Give him a 47. I'm not taking, you don't want me anyways, just give him a 47 and I'll leave.
He's going to get his money.
Yeah, I'm not taking 40. I'm not taking 38. No. Mm-hmm. Give me 47.
But what does that do for the Lakers, right? I mean, if they get a couple pieces like Beverly, who's been kind of a...
If you get Jordan Clarkson, I mean, Jordan Clarkson, you know...
He had a nice cup of coffee with the Lakers.
And also he had a nice run with the Utah Jazz. Mm-hmm. You know, he was one of their guys who came off their bench. I think on most nights he gave them, double digits in terms of his offensive production. So he's the guy that knows what LA is all about. It's high energy. Someone can come in off the bench and provide a spark for you. You know, if they had to go that route, I would look at him among the guys that you just mentioned first.
Big picture, though, in light of how competitive the West is, it's hard to see the Lakers, even if Anthony Davis plays all season, which is a huge if. You know, you're moving on from Westbrook. You've got LeBron and AD, and you've got, you know, some nice pieces around him, but there's not a whole lot there. I don't see the Lakers, and they're always a story. They're always, everybody pays attention to the Lakers because of LeBron, but I don't see the Lakers being in the mix at all next year.
Well, they can't be in the mix if Anthony Davis, for one, can't stay healthy, and I don't know, and I don't believe that as good as LeBron James, you know, is today, and some of the things he still can do, I just don't know if he can do it for the long haul of a regular season. He just doesn't have enough in the tank, I think, to carry his team and average 30 points a game by playing 75-plus games throughout the season.
Yeah.
And so, to me, more so than Anthony Davis, the real key is LeBron James. I saw him come to the Target Center after a back-to-back game against Detroit. He had nothing. He had nothing.
Yeah.
You know, everybody talked about Russell Westbrook, you know, being the sore eye for the L.A. Lakers. He played 78 basketball games. He averaged, what, 18 points a game for them, 7 rebounds, maybe 7 assists. He was the only guy that was available to play. Now, he didn't play well throughout the entire regular season, but I think it's unfair to just blame Russell Westbrook for the demise of the LA Lakers this past season.
No question. I mean, it'd be nice to have Anthony Davis available, right? And even when Westbrook was brought to the Lakers, virtually everybody said, "How is this going to work?" I mean, the Lakers need shooting. They need a guy that can, you know, pop from the corner to, you know, open threes, and that's not Russell Westbrook's game.
Well, the reason it didn't work is because of the two guys you mentioned at the start of this conversation, Anthony Davis and LeBron James. You know, they weren't healthy enough, long enough throughout the regular season to put this team in a position to be contenders. That was a demise right there of the L.A. Lakers. I know Russell Westbrook is going to get the major credit, major criticism for this. But the reason the Lakers have fallen off the map is because Anthony Davis and LeBron James can no longer stay on the floor for a large portion of the regular season to make this team a contender.
Yeah, and certainly the Lakers knew that that was a chance with Anthony Davis when they swung the big deal for him, because that was his MO in New Orleans, too. He just could not stay on the court.
And when they won the, as we call it, the pandemic NBA championship, you have to believe that at the time the NBA was shut down in March, and when they resumed play again, LeBron James had 5 months to recover before they went back to work.
Right, that's huge.
So let's say if he goes through a season now where he plays 78 basketball games and the Lakers are the sixth or seventh or maybe the eighth place team in the Western Conference, playoff starts, you know, 10 days later. You don't get 2 or 3 months off to recover.
Then. Right.
He may not have enough gas in the tank to finish a playoff run for the Lakers as well. So if you're the L.A. Lakers, and I know LeBron James is a huge name, perhaps in the top three for me as of all-time great players in the history of basketball, how long do you wait? How long do you wait before you make a move? Because if he walks away at the end of his career and you have nothing left in return, where do you find your franchise for the next 10 years?
Are you suggesting they should look to move him? I mean, what are you going to get for LeBron James?
Right? And you might get a whole lot. I don't know. Somebody might be willing. LeBron James is a box office name. But for the L.A. Lakers, if he can't stay healthy and stay on the floor, I mean, I understand that the attraction of the name of LeBron James, but if I'm in the front office, I'm having conversations right now.
Really?
About, hey, you know, we got to take a strong look at the future.
See, I think they're going to keep LeBron as long as he'll stay because he's, you know, he is their team right now. He's what drives the attention of that team.
But if he signs a 1-year extension, and let's say if he's out of basketball 2 years from now, where do we go?
Give me some dark days in L.A. for a while.
I'm sorry, if you were in the Lakers front office, and I know, you know, that you don't want this conversation to become public, you don't want this to get out into on social media where now everybody's going crazy and talking about the Lakers are trying to trade LeBron James. You know, but at some point in time, you may have to have that conversation. Because if you can move LeBron James now with the perception of someone else thinking that LeBron James can still do some of the things he's done in the past, you know, you just might be able to hit a home run for the future.
No, I hear you. I just feel like LeBron's got all the power there. Like, they're not going to say, we're trading you to Cleveland. It's going to be like, where would you want to go? We'll try to effort that for you. It's not just going to be surprised.
I get having a conversation. I get that. But I'm talking about, if you're the L.A. Lakers, you know, are you willing to have that conversation? Because now your future is at stake. You know, Anthony Davis, you know, you can't count on him to be healthy. You're going to ship out Russell Westbrook because you don't think he can play at this level anymore. So your only valuable asset and your only valuable piece now to protect your future might be looking at somehow, some way, exploring a possible trade for LeBron James.
Well, that would be earth-shattering if that's what happened. We have to break a couple quickies on fathers and sons. Emailer Richard said he saw the Griffies hit back-to-back homers once, senior and junior. So that would be awesome. I don't remember that. And emailer Kevin just sent me a screenshot that in the late 70s, the three Howe brothers were teammates together, and I think their dad joined them like in an exhibition.
Okay. I think that is right, yeah.
But that's about the only time we've seen fathers and sons, and we'll see if LeBron can hang on long enough wherever that might be. We'll pause here. We'll come back. A couple more NBA notes and lots of NFL stuff to get to as we inch closer and closer to the NFL season. We're back with much more in the Zone.
On the Fan.
We're back, 8:44 on a Saturday morning. You're in the Zone. Tucker and Sinekin hanging out with you on a dark, rainy, stormy Saturday morning. Not ideal for the first Saturday in August, that is for sure. Lots of NFL for us to discuss. I have a couple more NBA nuggets to get to a Double T before we switch over to the NFL. Double T, we learned this week the NBA is investigating two teams for tampering. The Knicks regarding Jalen Brunson, your team, which signed Jalen Brunson instantly. And, of course, with his dad coaching there, that was people connected those dots anyway. But and we know this is done, right? I mean, the Bucks got docked a second-round pick for having a Bogdanovich deal kind of in place before they were supposed to. So if they do find evidence, I'm sure the Knicks will be dinged with a draft pick or so. The Sixers also being investigated for the James Harden deal. This one's a bit murkier.
Well, but the P.J. Tucker deal as well.
Well, that kind of relates to the Harden deal. Because Harden turned down or did not exercise, I should say, the player option, which I think was going to pay him
47?
Yeah, like 47 a year. He took much less, like 34, I think, or 36 or something, allowing Philly to sign P.J. Tucker and Danwell House and make some moves to add depth and add to the roster around Embiid and Harden. And the NBA is thinking there was some funny business going on there to allow that to happen. So those two teams being investigated, and generally it's draft picks. It's not anything, you know, a whole lot crazier than that and unlikely to be a first unless they found it to be egregious. But, you know, they're trying to do their best to keep the tampering down. But I think Double T, we all know that
it happened.
It happens, and players and agents and front office people are talking all the time. You just got to be smart about it. You know, maybe don't sign Jalen Brunson one stroke after midnight. You know, let it kind of move along for a few hours and then make it official. So we'll keep an eye on that and then the impact that has. I think it's safe to say that neither of those teams are going to get dinged as much as the Wolves got dinged for signing Joe Smith under the table. That kind of move today – I would think would not at all be as penal as it was for the Wolves back then. That was a message being sent by David Stern, and one that really set the franchise back a decade, probably.
Yeah, and I think that's what the Miami Dolphins should get for Stephen Ross.
Well, they lost a first-round pick. That's pretty penal when it comes to the NFL.
No, they should. They said, well, precedent, probably hasn't been set because, this is the first time seeing ownership very involved in a situation like what happened with the Miami Dolphins. But if the Wolves were punished like they were punished for the Joe Smith deal, and if this is seen to be egregious on what the Miami Dolphins, put together, they should suffer the same consequences.
Well, and it was not proven that the owner gave instructions to actually tank and lose games, as Brian Flores
said. Where we value draft picks over winning football games.
Right.
That's self-explanatory.
Yeah, it really is.
Come on. So the only way I can get a high draft pick is by what?
Losing. Right?
If we can't read between those lines, what are we looking at? So if you want to make someone pay and make sure that this never happens again, you have to set a strong precedent to make sure that no other NFL owner can consider themselves as being above the law.
Well, and what the Dolphins got nicked were for going after Sean Payton to be their head coach and Tom Brady. And it's funny, Brady's been the center of like three tampering probes, and he never gets any penalty at all. It's the teams that he's dallying with that get nicked. It's interesting that Brady's kind of Mr. Teflon when it comes to playing outside the rules a little bit, trying to figure out where he wants to go. Because that was the same thing when he went to Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And there was talk about him going to Miami,
what
as we said
the,
this
what,
past
what
year.
With the, what do you call it? The
Deflategate?
Deflategate, yeah. Was he suspended for a few games or not?
I think so. Wasn't he? Just a few games.
I think so.
It was
three or four games.
It was a slap on the wrist. It was nothing major.
He should have been suspended for the season?
I don't know. No, I don't know about that.
Well, I think what the Miami Dolphins, have done, They need to feel the pain. Because if you're going to slap Stephen Ross and his organization on the wrist, what are you going to do with the next owner who decides to do the same thing?
All right, so he loses a first-round pick next season and a third-round pick the year after that.
He's losing for 2 or 3 years.
And he's not allowed to be a part of the team until mid-October. That's something. Well, you're shaking your head. Well, it is to Stephen
He's
Ross.
He's a multi-billionaire.
He wants to be at his games. So he wants to be on the sideline.
So I miss, 4 or 5 games? And I'm on my yacht, hanging out in the Caribbean. And then I come back on my private jet. I'll land my, my helicopter inside the stadium. And I'm there for the rest of the season. And you're going to find me, $1.5 million?
Well, the money is probably immaterial.
Right.
But losing it, I think losing a number one and a number three is pretty hard discipline.
Make it for 2 or 3 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Would be a cautionary tale.
Because this should not be taking place in the NFL. Because now if a player, falls and does certain things here or there, they are punished much harsher, than the owners. This should not be allowed to take place among the guys who run the league.
Well, they're doing their best, I think, to make sure that doesn't happen.
They're not doing their best.
Well, I think that discipline was pretty strong. It was stronger than I expected from what I heard.
Well, the Wolves got – the Wolves were taking –
Well, let's not compare that.
Well, what's the difference? You're saying lose football games on purpose.
Well, no, they were not – that would be a different story. Yes, if that was proven double T, yes – throw the book at them. But that's not what they said. They could not find proof that they lost games on purpose or directed the coaching staff. It may have happened.
I mean, we know it happened.
But there was no proof of that. They could not discipline them for that. They disciplined them for tampering with Peyton and Brady.
Well, the statement, hey, we value draft picks more than winning. That's enough for me.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, that's enough for me.
And if I'm a player playing for that owner, I don't know. I have a hard time going all out for that guy. And there's some that said maybe Stephen Ross should lose a team, just like Daniel Snyder is being talked about. Mm-hmm. And I'm all for finding better stewards of organizations that are going to play by the rules if you can find guys like that. Unfortunately, not unfortunately, but teams are worth so many billions of dollars now that the pool of potential owners is getting rather narrow. It's tough to be able to afford a team.
They have enough guys out there that probably could buy an NFL team, because I think there's probably more billionaires today compared to yesterday. You don't have a lot of guys, You know, back then, you know, if you had, you know, big automobile dealerships, you had a number of, you know, the big car dealership guys years and years ago used to own teams. But now
the like Bud Selig.
The tech company guys now are the guys that have all the money. You can't tell me that, you know, that Jeff Bezos couldn't buy four football teams.
Yeah, tech venture capital guys. There's definitely some guys with a few deep pockets. Bezos could probably buy every team in the NFL.
Bezos could buy the league.
Make it the Amazon Football League.
Yeah, he could buy the league.
May not be too far away from happening. We'll pause here. We'll come back. Let's talk Vikings. We'll talk Packers. We'll talk quarterbacks. There's a whole bunch of quarterbacks with a whole lot of pressure on them. I'm going to chat with Trent about which ones he believes might have the most success, either young guys or quarterbacks in new places. Lots of NFL conversation up next when we return.
This is The Fan.
On a Saturday morning, you're in the zone. Tucker and Sinekin, 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. That means we are 1 hour away from the debut of Fantasy Football Weekly, following our program at 10 o'clock today. Then it's Vikings Talk with Saturdays with Sauce, Meat Sauce, and Nordo from training camp, which I'm guessing we're talking Egan at TCO Center. They'll be on from noon to 2 today. Let's talk some NFL. We'll talk plenty of Vikes. I'll give you the latest on the pack. During the break, Double T and I were weighing in on the latest on the Deshaun Watson situation, which just gets murkier and weirder by the day, as you know. Suspended 6 games by an independent arbitrator. The NFL has chosen to appeal that decision. Roger Goodell has hired former New Jersey Attorney General Peter Harvey to make his own determination on what should be done. And, you know, as we were talking during the break, Double T, it's just the NFL can't figure out how to do this the right way. I mean, it makes sense. All right, we're going to bring in some independent person that the Players Association is fine with, the owners are fine with, and whatever he or she decides, that's going to be the discipline. 6 games was brought in. The judge decided that based on the evidence of the 4 or 5 accusers that she was looking at that evidence, she felt, looking at precedent that, of the kind of punishment the NFL had doled out before, that 6 games was appropriate. I'd say the public outcry was, what? I mean, 6 games? So you're telling me that a wide receiver for the Falcons who bets $100 on his team on DraftKings is out for the year? And a guy who reportedly made, you know, 25 to 30 women extremely uncomfortable gets 6 games. So that just, again, it's all about public opinion. The NFL, you know, smelled the what was in the air and said, yeah, this is not going to do. So now we kind of start over again. And this guy, Harvey, has a long history of adjudicating this kind of stuff and has quite the resume. But where are we with this? And what's the end game? You said to me, you don't think Deshaun Watson will play football this season.
I don't think so.
You think he will be suspended. And the PA can't do anything to appeal at that point. I mean, it is what it is.
Right. I don't think he'll play this year. Once Roger Goodell decided, and the NFL decided to appeal the decision that was made by the judge, and now they want to go make their own decision, I just don't think Deshaun Watson is going to play football this year.
I'm probably with you there, and I'm fine with that. What I do like about what I know the NFL is looking for, and for me, it's about you know, what he did, you know, we can agree or disagree the level of heinousness. You know, we don't know all the exact details. And I think what made a lot of people uncomfortable about the decision handed down this week was the judge's phrasing of this was nonviolent behavior. And that's why she thought it's not Ray Rice. It's, you know, and we can argue, what does nonviolent mean? To me, if you cause emotional and mental anguish, that's violent behavior. It's not just look at the bruises all over my body. Violence doesn't need to be physical. So we can have that argument about
it. Yeah, you can have that. But I think, you know, when there's people are in a situation where there's bad behavior, and there's always different degrees of punishment, you know, for every action that takes place. And I think at some point in time, the NFL has got to put policies in place to say if you go to this level or that level or the next level, you know, this is the punishment that you're going to receive, you know, so that, you know, you don't have to be going back and forth and not making a good decision on how, you know, to conduct the behavior of your players and your owners in your league. Because if you weren't going to agree with the person that you put in place to make a decision based on the evidence that she was looking at and the precedent that has been set by you in cases of this nature, well, then there was no need for you even to go down that road. Just make the decision yourself. If you think that what took place and you, the judge and the jury, just say we're going to suspend him for a year and move on.
I totally agree. Well, why go through this charade and why set this up if you're just going, that's not good enough. Well, we'll do our own thing. Well, right. Sorry to waste your time for the last 6 weeks.
I don't get the answer that I'm looking for from you. I've already given you the answer that I want. I want you to suspend him for the year, but this is the information that we're going to give you to make that decision. And she came back and said, hey, you know, the evidence that you presented to me doesn't warrant based on what you have said in the past, for him missing the entire season. Now, if you believe and you want to do something different, well, now you have a chance to do that.
What I do like, as I was getting to a moment ago, that the NFL wants to put into whatever the punishment ends up being for Deshaun Watson, is that he does seek some kind of therapy, some kind of treatment to, I mean, I think we can mostly agree that if you go see 60 or 70 different massage therapists in a single, you know, calendar year, that's not normal behavior. That's not what's typically done. And so the NFL wants to say he needs to talk to somebody. There needs to be a rule in place that players can see therapists that are, you know, approved upon by the team, and that's it. And let's not let these guys go out.
They can't put that rule in place.
But you can't see other massage therapists?
Yeah.
I'm paying you, you know, $50 million a year.
So when the football season is over, you can control my life when the season is over?
No, they
don't have that right. They should make a decision based on, you know, the behavior that took place. And if this is the behavior that took place that violated what the NFL policy stands for, this is the punishment that you receive.
But you don't think having him get, you know, some mental help for this situation?
I mean, this is not normal. They can make a suggestion, or if this is in the policy, these are the things that come with the rulings that we're going to make. You know, you are subject to going to seeking therapy, but the NFL needs to put that in writing. Okay, you just can't say all of a sudden out of the wind we're going to make you do this, because you haven't set the precedence for other people to do the same thing. So at some point in time, I think the NFL have to come with a unified policy that's going to work for everyone. So everyone understands now, if you go to this level of behavior, this would be the consequence for that.
It's murky. His future is certainly in doubt for this season. We'll see where that goes and where it goes for Cleveland. I do want to talk quarterbacks, and I've got two trios of quarterbacks. I want to get your thoughts on the pressure they're under, and who you think will have the most successful season. Watson is one of those veterans in a new place, but we're going to set him aside.
He's not going to play.
We don't think he's going to play. But I've got three other guys that are in new places that, to different degrees, I think there's optimism. The three guys I'm looking at are Carson Wentz in Washington, Matt Ryan in Indy, and Baker Mayfield in Carolina. Now, of those three, Carolina's probably got the least upside, but you may recall early last season when they brought Darnold in and McCaffrey was healthy, they got off. I think they were 3-1 or something. They got off to a pretty quick start before the injuries and the quarterback became who we thought he was. So I don't think the cupboard's that bare in Carolina. But that said, Matt Ryan goes to Indy and joins a team that, you know, collapsed at the end of the year, but has a lot of pieces, including Jonathan Taylor, some nice young receivers and a really good defense. And Carson Wentz goes to Washington, another team that, you know, was a playoff team not that long ago. And again, strong defense. They fell off a little bit, but some nice pieces. So of those three guys, Wentz, Ryan, and Mayfield, when all said and done this season, do any of them take their team to the playoffs? And if so, which of those three guys do you think has the most success with his new team?
I would say Matt Ryan. I think he is the most polished of the other two that you just mentioned. He has playoff experience. He was in the Super Bowl before. I thought his coaches failed them to now hold the lead against the New England Patriots. So if there's a guy that I believe that can put a team in position to make the playoffs and have a nice run, you know, based on what he has accomplished in the league throughout his career, it would be Matt Ryan.
I agree. I think Indy's going to win the division, and we know how stacked the AFC is. And, you know, the AFC West has four teams that all believe they can be playoff teams, and we know they're going to knock each other off, and there's going to be some attrition there. But you look at, you know, the East has, you know, with Buffalo and Miami's feeling good about themselves. New England was a playoff team. The North is always competitive. That South division just seems there for Indy. I know Tennessee was the number one seed last year and didn't have Derrick Henry for a big chunk of the season, and they're the favorite. I get that. But I think Matt Ryan's going to take this opportunity and run with it. Mm-hmm. You know, he's never had a running back like Jonathan Taylor, and he's heard the whispers the last few years, since the Super Bowl, really, the collapse, that, you know, his time has passed. And I don't think it has. I think he's got a couple of years left in him, and I think it's the perfect opportunity for him. And that's one of my kind of surprise picks, too. I think Indy wins that division, and I think Matt Ryan has kind of a comeback season.
Well, also, you know, he's going to have, you know, the right personnel around him that's going to allow him to be good, where the entire pressure would not be on his shoulders to carry the team week in and week out. You know, when they made that run, you know, to the Super Bowl, the Falcons, they were a very, very good football team. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had a huge lead. You know, all they had to do from a coaching standpoint now was just manage the game the right way. The only way that New England could get back in the game was they needed time and possession. Why are you passing the football?
Mm-hmm.
Run some time off the clock. Yeah, I know we got a great passing attack, but what if it doesn't work at this time? All of a sudden now you give Tom Brady a few more seconds left on the clock. You give Tom Brady a few more extra possessions. He make a few plays here or there. The defense begins to tighten up. All of a sudden the opposition gains energy and excitement. They become a little bit better. And before you know it, you probably blow the biggest lead in Super Bowl history.
I'm sure they're still kind of banging their heads against the wall, thinking about how they would do things differently now that they, years later, looking back at that opportunity.
Because you know as well as I do, and whatever professional sport or collegiate sport it may be, you know, there is no guarantee that if you make a run toward a championship-type situation, if you're ever going to get back there again, because it's the hardest thing to do. Mm-hmm. Some teams, some players are very fortunate where they can make multiple runs and have multiple wins. You know, but for a large portion of the guys who play and the teams who participate, those things don't happen.
No question. Yeah, and look where Atlanta is now. They're starting over a few years later. All right, here's another one for you, Double T. Three young quarterbacks who are surrounded by a lot of talent and a lot of optimism and hope that their team might be one of those teams that rise up and maybe makes a deep playoff run. I'd say one of the three is different in that he has no experience, but he's got the best team around him. The other two have played and started for a couple of years, but haven't yet taken that next step. So my three guys here are Tua, Jalen Hurts, and Trey Lance. So Lance is obviously the one that is going to be handed the keys to San Francisco, but he's got a roster around him that many believe
is ready to win now.
Could win a Super Bowl, right? I mean, San Francisco is looked at as a team that could be in the mix if their quarterback. I mean, nobody knows what Trey Lance is going to be. And some of the early rumblings that I've read and reports are that he's not had a great start to training camp. a lot of pressure on Trey Lance to take that roster around him and compete.
That's understandable.
Yeah. Right? Uh-huh. Tua, you know, they bring in Tyreek Hill with Jalen Waddle. They've got two just speedster running backs. They add to the running back room. They've got a very good defense. That's a team poised to challenge Buffalo in that division if Tua, with a new head coach, offensive-minded coach, coming from the West Coast, if he can elevate Tua's game. And then Jalen Hurts, who, you know, his team was a playoff team a year ago, but, you know, there's questions about whether Jalen's ready to lead his team and can he carry a team on his back. But again, the players around him, great offensive line. They added A.J. Brown to go with Devonta Smith. They've really invested in the wide receiver position. Very good secondary. Just a good, solid team in a division where we can argue, you know, and Jamar's listening and he's not happy that I'm not high on Dallas, but Dallas hasn't made back-to-back playoff appearances in like 20 years. So the jury's out on Dallas. There's an opportunity for Philly if Jalen Hurts can take that next step. So between Tua, Jalen Hurts, and Trey Lance.
Who has the most pressure?
A, who has the most pressure? And then B, who do you think has the most successful season this year to lift his team?
I think the most pressure is probably on Trey Lance.
I agree, and I don't think it's even close.
I think the most pressure is on him. Philadelphia fans can be very, very tough. I think the difference between Tua and Jalen Hurts compared to Trey Lance, if I can go back a few years ago before they became NFL players, they played in big games. Trey Lance has never played at that level, at the collegiate level.
Right.
Okay, never played at that level, at the collegiate level, I should say. You know, Jalen Hurts lost to Deshaun Watson in the national championship game because his defense couldn't make one more stop.
Mm-hmm.
Tua comes in, takes Jalen Hurts out. He saves Alabama in the second half, I think, against Georgia again or Clemson, somebody he came back and beat. So those two guys have been in big games before at the collegiate level. Now, for Tua, I hear a lot of talk about where he doesn't have the big arm. They brought out these speedsters in around him. So when you have a quarterback that has a certain amount of talent and a certain amount of ability, as a head coach, can you put a system around him for him to be successful, knowing that he may be lacking a few things here or there? I think the guy that's going to have the breakout season will be Jalen Hurts.
All right, so we're agreeing on both of these. I'm bullish on Philadelphia this year, in part because I don't like their division, and I think they have a chance to.
Now, I'm not saying that Tua won't have a good year. I think Tua will have a good year. But I think the guy that's going to step out and take the next step will be Jalen Hurts.
Agree. And I think adding A.J. Brown just really helps him.
But also, like you just mentioned, you know, they've added, you know, pieces around them. I mean, you take what's the kid in Chicago?
Justin Fields?
Justin Fields. You put Justin Fields in San Francisco. Is he a more prepared player right now than Trey Lance based on where his performance at the collegiate level was at Ohio State?
Well, obviously, the level he played.
Yeah,
sure.
You look at Chicago. Justin Fields is running for his life on every single play. You put Justin Fields in Miami. You put Justin Fields in Philadelphia. I mean, all of a sudden now, they have pieces around them, you know, that can help them grow as players. So the entire pressure on them to carry the team week in and week night is not on their shoulders. So I think Tua will have a good year if they put the right system around him and take advantage of the things that he can do, because he's shown the world at one point in time that he could win a national championship with the talent that he's got. And now you have, you know, some of the best NFL personnel around him. So I think he will have a good year. But I think the guy that's going to have a breakout year should be Jalen Hurts.
I'm with you. I'm really curious to see what Tua can do in Miami, because I do think that he will be improved. I think that offense will be better. But we talk about it every week. Everybody does. The AFC is so loaded that Miami, you know, they could win 10, 11 games and not even make the playoffs.
Yeah, how many did they win last year? 10?
Yeah, 9 or 10, right?
And they made the playoffs.
No.
Right, they got off to a terrible start and had a great run. I think won like 7 games in a row.
Yeah, 7 in a row.
And you know, one of the 10 football games, you might think, hey, you know, we have a chance to, you know, to sneak in here or there. But like you say, when you play in a loaded division in a tough conference, you know, 10 wins sometimes may not be enough.
Yeah, and I haven't looked closely at Miami's schedule to see how difficult it might be. But you mentioned Trey Lance, and you're so right. People forget, you know, he didn't play his last year at NDSU except for one game, mm-hmm. you know. So he's 2 years removed from really playing football. And And granted, we love the Bison and their, you know, FCS powerhouse.
He's a wonderful talent.
And he's a great talent. But to ask him after basically 2 years of sitting on the sidelines, here are the keys to a team that was in the NFC Championship game a year ago with everything around you. And now you've got to just, you know, take over as the driver and lead this team. That's a lot to ask of him.
No doubt about it.
And so I find that situation maybe the most interesting storyline of the NFL. That team, ready to win, is going to move on from Jimmy G and say it's Trey Lance's time. And, you know, it'll be a work in progress. But, boy, the pressure. It's a great opportunity for him, for sure. But it's a lot to ask.
I mean, and if he struggles, can you fault him? Like
right.
You said, he really hasn't played a lot of football in the last 2 years. And now you're asking him, you know, to take the keys to one of the teams that many people are destined to win the championship. And can he handle that situation?
Yeah. That's going to be a great thing to
That's
follow.
That's a lot to ask.
For sure.
That's a lot to ask.
We'll see how much he plays. The very first preseason game for the Niners is against the Packers next Friday night. So it'll be our first chance to see Trey Lance. I assume he'll play. I don't know how much he'll play. In the first preseason game.
Well, he can't afford to have him get injured.
No doubt. And you won't see number 12 play at all in the preseason. That, we are sure. No. That's just not something that he does. So it's the Hall of Fame game was Thursday night, and the list of Jaguars that didn't suit up and Raiders that didn't suit up, I think, was longer than the list of the guys that did suit up. It's not really watchable football. But still, like 5.7 million people watched that Hall of Fame game. That tells
it's football.
You that it is football, and everyone wants to watch. We'll pause here. We'll come back. Vikings news, Packers news, and level of concern for Matthew Stafford's ailing elbow. We'll continue to talk NFL. We welcome your input if you want to care to chat with us. 800-320-5326. Lines available, or drop us an email at the Bradshaw and Brian inbox, Booth, B-O-O-T-H, at KFAN.com. We're back.
Store.
We're back, 9:21 on a Saturday morning. Rainy and a stormy. See some lightning in the air. Saturday morning. Tucker and Sinekin, we're in the zone. We're with you till the top of the hour. Fantasy Football Weekly debuts following our program at 10 o'clock this morning. News broke a couple days ago that Sean McVay is concerned about Matthew Stafford's elbow, double T. He called it abnormal elbow pain, which is not good for your 34-year-old Super Bowl-winning quarterback.
It's true.
Who was dealing with elbow pain a year ago, and he's equating it more to what a Major League Baseball pitcher faces with an elbow, which is, to me, red flags are flying everywhere. He dealt with the issue. He's had the issue for a while. He played with it, but it hasn't gotten better.
Okay.
And so they're monitoring how much they're using him in the preseason, and we know Matthew Stafford's a tough guy. You know, he's played through injuries. He's one of those guys that it feels like once or twice a game, he gets knocked down and gets up really slowly, and you think he's dying, and he's fine. He gets right back in there. But for the Super Bowl champs who have built their team kind of like a house of cards, right? I mean, they've got great talent top to bottom, but there's very little provable depth behind any of their key players. They haven't drafted because they've traded all their draft picks away. So when they lose a key player or two, it hurts them because they just have sacrificed depth for star power.
Gotcha.
So we know the AFC's loaded. We know the NFC is kind of a wild, wild west, if you will. There's three teams that I think most feel the Rams, Bucks, and Packers are probably on that top tier.
I agree with that.
And then there's a group of teams that the Vikings are in, that next tier, I believe, that, you know, includes the Saints and the Eagles and the Cowboys and, You know, maybe the Niners if Trey Lance, you know, can, you know, be Trey Lance, maybe Arizona.
Right, but if Trey Lance can be Trey Lance, then San Francisco is in that. Then you have a top four.
Right, but that's a big ask for a quarterback who's never started and never played really outside of a few gadget plays last year. So if Stafford is compromised and behind him is Wolford, an unproven quarterback, that changes everyone's opinion of the Rams. Obviously, sure. The fan has learned if Stafford's not Stafford, they're probably not Super Bowl contenders. So I feel like this is a story or a situation, I guess, to really monitor, because I don't think abnormal elbow pain just kind of suddenly goes away. It's something to really watch, and it's a long season and he's getting older. Yeah. I just feel like this is one of those stories that if you're a Vikings fan or any of those teams in that next tier, you don't want to see a guy not play and get hurt, but it gives you feel like an opportunity that, all right, this is the right conference to be a team that has a lot of questions and maybe some upside like the Vikes have. Just it's something worth monitoring, because I don't feel like this story is just going to go away.
Yeah, I don't think the Vikings are paying too much close attention to what's taking place with Matthew Stafford. You know, they hear about it for sure, and you hate to hear that anyone is dealing with an injury, and they could, and if they have to be taken away for a significant amount of time, it's a bad deal for their team, man. No one wants to see that take place. And the Vikings are just concerned about themselves at this stage, I'm hoping, making sure that all their players are healthy and ready to go at the start of the season when we knock off the Green Bay Packers in game number one.
You'd like to see that, wouldn't you? You'd like to see that.
I'd love to come in the next week and talk about that.
Yeah. Sure you would. It's, as I said, I think the Vikes benefit from getting Green Bay week one. I do. I think Green Bay is, we know that their best two linemen are probably unlikely to play week one, Bakhtiari and Jenkins. Now, maybe Bakhtiari is okay by them, but he's not even practicing just yet. So likely you're going to be without those two guys. You're not going to have Robert Tonyan back yet.
The first game is when?
From the ACL, September 11th.
Okay.
And, you know, the Vikings have a brand new offense that they'll have shown nothing on tape. So the Packers, you know, they can look at what the Rams have done and figure like they're going to steal some of that stuff, but they're not going to have much to work with. So there's a certain element of surprise. So I think the Vikes get a bit of a leg up in week one. It's obviously when you're playing a division game at home, that's a game you need to win. And so it's a big week one game. And then remember last year, remember what the Packers did week one last year?
I don't.
They got destroyed. I was at 38-3 by the Saints.
A lot to a little. It was in Jacksonville too.
Right. It was played in Jacksonville, and Green Bay was annihilated.
Yeah, that was just a bad day.
Well, I know, but you know, sometimes they don't come out of the gate. Well, also,
I think when you talk about where the Packers are, yeah, they have great stability at the quarterback position. You know, but losing Devontae Adams and what's the other guy that went to Kansas City?
Marquez Valdes-Scantling.
And now you have a brand new receiving corps. It may take them some time to get on the same page with number 12.
Yeah, maybe. I think that you're going to find the two-headed running attack of Jones and Dillon are going to catch a whole lot of footballs for this team, too. And they still have, you know, Randall Cobb, Alan Lazard. They had Sammy Watkins. And the talk of training camp is their fourth-round pick, who might be the best fourth-round receiver since Stephon Diggs. Could we say? Is it too early to say that at this point? Romeo Doubs is turning heads, and granted, he's a rookie and likely won't start, but he's got Aaron Rodgers' attention. Rodgers is talking about him like, I haven't seen a guy this ready to play as a rookie in a long time here, and he's looking at all the great receivers of the past 10, 15 years that were drafted after round one in Green Bay and kind of comparing him to those guys. So,
well, he's wearing 87.
He's wearing Jordy Nelson's number, and he did play in a pro-style offense at Nevada with Carson Strong. So that's, you're right. I mean, you lose Devontae Adams at MVS, and you're unsettled at that position.
Yeah, I'm not saying the Packers won't have a great season, but maybe at the start, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, they're still trying to figure out what's going to take place here, because over the last 3 or 4 years, every time Aaron Rodgers decided that he was going to training camp, he had an idea on what type of team that was going to be in place week one. Now he may not know, because you might have too many more new moving parts, you know, coming to the situation for the first time. It may take us a few games to find that balance. And to get the Packers early on, you know, might be a good thing for most oppositions.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm on record as saying, I think Green Bay's defense is going to lead this team this year. And so far in training camp, it's by far had the upper hand, which might be an indictment on the offense, or it might just be that this defense with seven number one picks on the starting lineup, and then you add, you know, non-number one picks like Adrian Amos and Devondre Campbell, who was an all-pro, and Rasul Douglas, who was a Pro Bowler. They are loaded on defense. And so I can't wait for week one because I can't wait to see Green Bay's defense up against this new-look offense that they don't really know. They know Dalvin's going to get a whole lot of looks, and they know Jay Jett's going to get a whole lot of looks, but, you know, can they stop them with this talented defense? I'm excited about what Green Bay is going to bring on that side of the ball.
Well, you have to have a balance on both sides. But the Packers, over the years with Aaron Rodgers, have not just been known as a defensive team. They put numbers on the board. And your defense was great against San Francisco.
Yep.
Okay? But you couldn't put points on the board. And in the past, happy.
And Devontae was on the team at that point, I believe.
And also number 12 was on the team. And in a pass happy league, if you're uncertain about what your offense is going to do at the start, it's too much pressure to put on your defense to keep the game, to keep the score low enough to win a game, you know, what, 10-7.
Double T. 13-10. After watching the Vikings run defense last year, I understand it's a new defense. You got all these Packer coaches in to coach up the defense now. It's a 3-4 defense with Ed Donatell and Mike Pettine and Mike Smith. But after watching that run defense last year, I think Green Bay's game plan week one is Jones, Dillon, see if they can stop the run.
Just put it in the box.
And not worry. Oh, okay, and then they'll let the two-time defending MVP just pick his one-on-one stuff.
I'm not worried about Devontae Adams, not Jody Nelson. You know, Cobb is, you know, might be past his prime.
Cobb was born on the same day as Adam Thielen.
Okay.
So is Thielen past his prime?
No.
Okay.
Cobb has been more injured.
Been more injury prone.
And he's been around the league. He's left the team and come back. Alan Thielen has never left Minnesota.
Well, okay. I'm not sure how that makes a difference on the field, but they're the same age. It just cracks me up. Cobb's ancient. Why is he still? He's still productive. If he's healthy, he was off to a great start last year.
If Randall Cobb had to be your number one wide receiver,
yes.
I think most of the teams would take that.
I agree. You want him to be your number three receiver. I get that. I'm just saying, if he can stay healthy, I get that's what it's all about with Randall Cobb.
See what I'm saying? When Aaron Rodgers came to training camp last year, when he decided that he was going to come to training camp and get out of
the way, he was done taking his psychedelics. He was ready to play football.
So what is all that about? Okay, we'll get that to another thing. And 2 years ago, when he came to training camp, he knew that he had a number one wide receiver. He didn't have to worry about, you know, the passing game, because he had Devontae Adams. Okay, I want my boy back. I want Randall Cobb back now to be number three. So now I'm getting the band back together.
Yep.
But right now he doesn't know.
Yes, he does.
Who's going to be his number one receiver?
Of course he does.
Who?
Alan Lazard is his number one receiver.
Aaron Rodgers really don't know who's going to be his number one receiver.
We can respectfully disagree on that. He's going to get the opportunity now to be a number one receiver.
The guy right now that has Aaron Rodgers' attention is a fourth round wide receiver.
Yeah, he's brand new. He said, hey, who's this guy? He's making plays every day.
You said that Aaron Rodgers is saying
he knows what he has with Lazard.
He hasn't seen a lot of guys come into the league in the last 10, 15 years to play for the Green Bay Packers and that has opened his eyes up like this. So right now, if he had Devontae Adams, he would know who his number one wide receiver would be. But right now,
I mean, Lazard's a Hall of Famer. Might be. I don't know.
That's what Rodgers said.
I know. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You go from one
to
another.
3 or 4 weeks down the road, you know, you and I might be able to have a better conversation about this.
You know,
I think Aaron Rodgers is a little uncertain about who is his number one guy.
All right. Well, we'll disagree. I do follow this a bit closer. Lazard, a Des Moines kid.
I understand you follow it a bit closer. I'm talking about, you know, I'm looking at the team.
Yeah. Well, I've watched
personnel and talent and guys who have been in that position before.
Well, yeah. Lazard's going to get those targets and those opportunities. And for the fantasy guys who are following us, and I've seen, because I follow this stuff, you know, Lazard right now is like the 45th, 47th ranked receiver in fantasy football.
So that's a joke.
I look at that
and say, is that good or bad? Because I don't know anything about fantasy
football. Well, it's ridiculously undervalued. He is going to get so many more targets and so many more opportunities, and he is good. He's not Devontae Adams, granted, but he is going to get lots of opportunities and make plays, and he's made plays when he's had the opportunity.
Okay, so let me go in a different route here.
Okay. Hurry up, because we do have to pause one final time.
Okay. The defense decided to take him away. Where does Aaron Rodgers go?
Where do you want me to start? Do you move Aaron Jones out wide and dump one off to Aaron Jones?
Number one wide receiver, where does Aaron Rodgers go?
Goes to Sammy Watkins. He goes to Randall Cobb. He goes to Romeo Doubs or Christian Watson, who eventually will start practicing, the second round pick from NDSU. He goes to Tyler Davis as tight end until Robert Tonyan comes back.
That's why I say Aaron Rodgers is uncertain.
All I know is the Packers are 7-0 when Devontae didn't play.
I know Aaron Rodgers is uncertain.
Somehow they make things work.
I know about the Green Bay Packers. Aaron Rodgers is uncertain right
as
now.
As I said to you a week or two ago, if this Green Bay Packer team is going to be weak somewhere offensively, let it be at wide receiver. Because I'd rather have the quarterback. I'd rather have a sturdy offensive line and a really good run game. Tom Brady made ordinary receivers Super Bowl champions. And, you know,
who said it was ordinary?
The list outside of Randy Moss, the list of quarterbacks that Brady won Super Bowls with, but nobody's going in the Patriots Ring of Honor, you know, at wide receiver from those years.
I think that's a mistake a lot of people are making.
Okay.
It's because they said, well, these guys were ordinary. No, these guys weren't ordinary. These guys were extraordinary. And some of the plays and the catches that they made and that championship run, you know, Tom Brady, once he became comfortable with those guys on his team, every year he went to training camp, he knew what he had. They weren't changing personnel from the wide receiver every year here and out. They had a core guys that they kept together.
Well, Amendola, Green Bay's been the same way until this year.
That's why I say Aaron Rodgers at the beginning of the season might be a little uncertain about who is going to be his number one guy. I'm not saying that the Packers are not going to be a good football team.
Well, I'll take it. We'll end it on this.
Okay.
I hear what you're saying.
Right, yeah.
I say he's probably concerned who's going to be my 2, 3, 4 guys. Alan Lazard is his number one guy, and he is going to put up big numbers. He's a big body. He can contest balls. He understands the offense. He can block. He's going to be on the field constantly, and he has Rodgers' trust. He has made so many big plays for this team the last couple of years. He knows who his number one is. He may not have the upside of Devontae Adams. I'm not saying he does. Of course he doesn't. But he has the upside to be a very good number one receiver in this league.
September 12th, September 13th, Good Day Cafe. I got the Vikings over the Packers.
And I'll have my, that omelet with the Gruyere and the potatoes and the leeks.
You know Eli Manning's not playing week one, right? He doesn't play for the purple.
Yeah.
You got to keep that in mind.
Aaron Rodgers would be in serious trouble if Eli Manning was.
Thanks for reminding him about that. We'll pause here. We'll come back, continue our NFL conversation when we come back in
the Fan.
Back 9:41, final segment in the zone for this Saturday morning. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Trent Tucker, Dave Sinekin with you. Fantasy Football Weekly at the top of the hour, the debut for 2022. It's not too early to start deciding when you will draft Alan Lazard on your fantasy team. Is it round 2? That's probably a bit early.
I got to talk to Charge about that.
He's a sleeper. I'll just say this.
But Josh is the guru.
He's drafting.
But Josh knows what's happening.
Drafted way too low for what production he will provide.
Who's the guru out here for fantasy football?
Charge, of course. Right. He's the godfather of fantasy football.
So who should I believe? The owner of the Green Bay Packers.
I haven't seen Charge's cheat sheet. Can you look up on LeagueSafe where he's got Lazard at wide receiver? Because I've looked at a couple where he's in the 40s. I'm like, how is Green Bay's number one receiver with back-to-back MVP quarterback still playing like that?
Does Charge have him in the 40s?
I don't know. Okay. We're going to have Mr. Blakemore check that out. Let's grab a call here while he does that as we continue to talk NFL here in the zone. Blaine, next, Saul joins us from Blaine. Good morning, Saul.
Good morning, guys. How you studs doing?
We're doing well. How you been?
First off,
Well, not too bad, bud. First off, I can't remember a year where going into the season, I'm actually more excited and optimistic for the Wolves than the Bikes. I just, I'm still kind of, on my Bikes. And that being said, kind of comes down to, I mean, we've kind of neglected it for many a years outside of Keenum. You know, it won't happen, and I don't think the salaries would add up, but I'd love to see having, you know, a guy like a Garoppolo for a backup. You know, I mean, he's out there. But that being said, I could see you guys were talking about Stafford earlier. I could see the Rams. I don't know what they got for draft equity, but I could see the Rams making a push to get him just so their season's not sunk. Because basically, if you don't got someone competent, you know, as a backup, you know, you're pretty much, doesn't matter if you're the Rams or the Bikes, you're pretty much screwed. But kind of all I got. You guys have a great day.
Okay. Yeah, thanks a lot, Saul. I mean, the logic is there. The flaw is there's no chance San Francisco would trade Jimmy G inside the division to the Rams. And that, even like Seattle's another team that would love to have Jimmy G. They've got Geno Smith and Drew Lock right now fighting for that spot. Garoppolo would fit. But again, why would San Francisco help a team in its own division? So right. Two of the teams.
So that's why they won't cut Jimmy G.
No, they will not. He's making a lot of money. At the very least, he's your backup to Lance if things don't work out or Lance doesn't get hurt. I still think there will be a team that will have an injury.
And become desperate
and say, you can't just say, well, Minnesota should take him as their backup. Well, okay, but can they just take his salary and stick it into their cap? He's making a ton of money. So it's not that easy.
The $24 million?
Something like that. Yeah. You can't just say, I'll take him. He'd be a nice backup, better than what we have. He's certainly better than Mannion. He might,
yeah.
But you can't fit him under the cap at this point. Mr. Blakemore, where does Charge have Lazard in his wide receiver rankings?
So our friend Paul Charchian at GuillotineLeagues.com has Alan Lazard as the 35th ranked wide receiver. He is just above Jerry Jeudy, just below Chase Claypool.
Yeah, and that's a little higher than I've seen. And again, there's probably plenty of great-sounding receivers there. But I feel like I think people are sleeping on Lazard because he doesn't have the sexy name and the sexy production, but he's going to have the sexy opportunities.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to, the targets.
Well, he has a chance to prove himself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he has a chance to move up on the leaderboard, right?
Yes, okay. For sure. He'll have all those opportunities for sure. I want to just weigh in on the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It brings in a new class today.
Okay.
One of my all-time favorite Packers, Leroy Butler, finally gets the call after waiting
how many
20 years, I think.
20?
He was the only 16 years. He and Tony Boselli have both waited 16 years. Cliff Branch has waited 32 years to get the call. You may remember me, the bitter guy a year ago when John Lynch got in as a safety before Butler. And if you just put up the career stats next to each other of Lynch and Butler, it's not close. But Lynch has been in the game. He's obviously an executive and you know, a little more popularity, and he got that call first. I'm really happy for Leroy Butler, who's should be known for more than this, but most kids know that Leroy Butler was the first ever to perform the Lambeau Leap after stripping somebody of the football. Reggie White picked it up, started lumbering and going, I ain't running 50 yards with this ball, and he pitched it back to Butler, who took it to the house, jumped into the crowd, and the rest was history.
Okay.
But he was a fantastic safety. He intercepted balls, he sacked the quarterback, and had to wait
too
long.
So long?
I don't know. I think safety is one of those positions where players do wait longer than you think they probably should, and it's just a hard position to evaluate. I mean, we've seen some lately, like Ed Reed and Polamalu. Those guys are going to get in instantly because of what they did.
What's the difference? I mean, you know, this, I think you and I have gone back and forth on this, you know, over the years about who's the first ballot, who's the second ballot, who's the eighth ballot, you know, because if this guy was that good during his playing days and he helped the Green Bay Packers, win, and he had to wait 16 years before he became a Hall of Famer. I don't think his numbers has changed over the last 16 years, have they?
No, not so much. They pretty much are what they are.
Has he played in the last 16 years?
He has not.
So why all of a sudden today, 16 years later, you know, he's a Hall of Famer now compared to 16 years before?
Yeah, I mean, some of it is just who else is available that year that, you know, at other positions that get the call ahead of them. Safeties just tend to be one of those positions that don't get acknowledged as quickly as they should.
Jamal said there's something wrong with the phone, he can't get through.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's a shame. Well, you can keep trying. 800 800-320. Saul got through. So 5326.
I'm just trying to. If a guy's a Hall of Famer, he's a Hall of Famer. And I know that you can only take so many guys.
You can't just say these guys are all, let's have a 37-man class this year. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, but like you said, what made John Lynch go in before Butler?
Yeah. To me, it's just he's been in the game. He's part of the NFL still. He's more top of mind.
But Butler, didn't the Packers win with him?
They did, yeah. Okay. They won a Super Bowl, there for you sure. Go. Catching up on a couple of emails, I'm getting just destroyed on email, which is typically what happens. Adam from Grand Forks. Did Dave just say the Saints are on the next tier of NFC teams? Has the fan learned you need a quarterback to win in the NFL? And then he says, Trent, see you at the Loon after the purple win on September 11th. I like Jameis Winston. He got hurt, but I do like Jameis Winston, and I do like what that team's got. So, it's got a very good defense.
So you have the Saints where?
I feel like they're in that next tier. They're in the same tier as the Vikings to me.
Oh, they okay.
Okay. I think there's three teams, LA, Tampa Bay, and Green Bay to me are the three. That's just to me. They are the three favorite teams in the NFL right now.
I'm going to put San Francisco in that group, even though Trey Lance might be the starting.
Well, that's the only reason me that they're not. And they're just, I don't have to look at the latest Super Bowl odds. Their Super Bowl odds are still very high. People are high on the fact that they think Trey Lance will elevate that team and keep them going in the direction they're going. But if you take those three teams away and let's remove San Francisco from the conversation, then yes, that next group of teams that to me are competing for playoff spots include Philly and Dallas and New Orleans and Minnesota and maybe Arizona. But there's, to me, on paper, not a lot to separate any of them. I think Jameis Winston, you get Michael Thomas back, who's missed, the last 2 years? Basically, they drafted Chris Olave out of Ohio State, so they've got two nice receivers. If Kamara can avoid a suspension, which from what I've read sounds maybe more likely that he will be available, I think the Saints are a pretty good football team. So I do think they're in. I mean, yes, if Winston gets hurt, everything changes when you lose your quarterback. But if Winston's healthy, I like Jameis Winston. Maybe I'm on an island there. What do you think of him? Are you a fan or not so much?
I like him, but I don't see the consistency there. So I wouldn't put the Saints in that category.
No?
No.
You guys play each other in London. Vikes and Saints. We'll see how that goes. I think those teams are very evenly matched. Another guy's getting on me saying the Packers get a break getting the Vikings week one because new coaching staff, knew this, knew that. I can see that. Mm-hmm. But I also see when you haven't put stuff on tape yet, especially offensively, it's a challenge for the defense. We don't know how Kevin O'Connell calls plays. We don't know how different that offense is going to look. They're not going to show anything.
He's not doing Spygate
in the preseason. We're not doing Spygate as far as I know. Another guy said, if you keep looking through those green glasses, you'll go blind. I'm going to make this point one more time, and I've said it a few times. When the season ended last year and in the offseason, I was on board with moving on from Aaron Rodgers. I said, if the Packers and Rodgers decide it's time, mm-hmm. I'm at peace with that. Here, Green Bay was the number one seed the last 2 years and didn't
get it done.
Didn't get to a Super Bowl even. And so what are we doing here? I mean, Rodgers is healthy.
He was an MVP. In the last 2 years?
They won a playoff game, but they didn't get to the Super Bowl. So I was ready to say, move on. Turn the page. We'll start over with Love and we'll see what we got. When they decided to sign the new deal, potentially 3 years, I think it's one. I think this is Rodgers' last season, but maybe it won't be. I'm on board. Who doesn't want to watch Rodgers play again? The guy just won two MVPs. And I think the roster is very solid. And I think they can compete. And that's why I'm bullish on this team. I think it's the best defense Green Bay's had in 20 years, I believe, on paper. I think this has a chance to be a very good defense. And they've got everything else except for a fearsome receiver core. They've got, if their linemen come back, and again, that's an if. If Bakhtiari doesn't come back, well, that changes my thoughts on Green Bay's high watermark. But, with them running it back, I do feel like they've got the pieces to compete again to win a Super Bowl, and they've got to do it in January. But that's why I'm optimistic. And it's not like I'm just wearing green and gold sunglasses and everything's great. I was ready to say, turn the page. Let's go. It didn't happen. We wanted it to happen. We thought it would happen. Let's move on.
But if Matthew Stafford can't play, well, that hurts the Rams for sure. And then the big question mark is all around Trey Lance. But I, you know, the only point I was just trying to make about the Green Bay Packers and their wide receiving core is that they all knew. I mean, I know you have a guy that was there a year ago, and he may not have been in your top three or four. He may have been in your top three or four, but he wasn't, you know, one of your main guys. And all of a sudden now you're moving a guy, you know, who was three or four a year ago in the receiving court to your number one guy. There is some uncertainty on whether he can handle that role or that responsibility.
Sure, he has to prove it. I get that.
So the point I was just making, I'm not saying the Green Bay Packers won't have a good football season or they won't have a good football team, you know, but for any established player like Aaron Rodgers, not knowing what his number one receiver is at today, there could be some time for them to get on the same page. And they may have a game or two where they may have to figure things out, but before the season is over, you know, based on the Packers' history, you know, they would be able to balance things out and have a good football season. That would be my only point.
Maybe if Green Bay had Jalen Naylor on their roster, they'd have a sure number one receiver. Did you see that highlight where he just dusted Andrew Booth?
Who?
At Vikings practice? See, I think I know your Vikings roster better than you do at this point.
You do.
Michigan State wide receiver Jalen Naylor. He was a late pick. He just dusted Andrew Booth.
All I want to know is that when we line up on September the 11th, you know, that's when the games begin.
And we get to decide, should we put Jair on Jefferson or should we just put Rasul Douglas or maybe Eric Stokes? And we'll do kind of an SEC thing.
If it's a one-on-one with Justin Jefferson, he may set the all-time NFL receiving yard record on Wednesday.
Against Jair Alexander?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
He can't guard Justin Jefferson.
What's he been drinking this morning? What did somebody?
We're drinking through the.
Well, you don't even have a cup. I would say somebody put something in your water, but you don't even drink water.
There is no defensive back in today's game that can guard a wide receiver by himself in today's game.
I totally disagree. We see cornerbacks take receivers out all day long.
You can't touch them. Quarterback got some time. We'll eat them alive. Leave Justin Jefferson out there by himself in a one-on-one situation. And Kirk Cousins has time to throw the football. He might set the all-time team receiving
okay.
Receiving
all right. Well, again, have time to throw the football. That's a big part of it as well.
Because we already know, in today's game, the defensive backs cannot guard wide receivers like they used to.
Yeah, but you're allowed to double-team, too. So if Jair's on him, and then the safety's kind of cheating over there.
No, I didn't say double-team. I said one-on-one. One-on-one.
All right, I'll have to figure out the wager on the over-under yards for Justin Jefferson week one, because I'm on the under, whatever
but
it is.
But if they double-team him, they can take him out of the game. But I'm somebody, if we had isolation, like prime time used to take half of the field away.
Right.
By himself. But if you're talking about no help over the top, nobody coming in, I'm just going to be you and I. Man, oh man. He can't guard Justin Jefferson.
You make a couple plays here and there.
He might knock one ball down here.
It's going to be a fun.
Because Cousin might throw it behind him.
Fun thing to watch. Well, there is that too. We're out of time. Have a wonderful week, my friend.
It's been fun today, man. You know
it has. Yeah. It has. I love when football is back.
Let's continue the conversation next week.
Let's do it.
Okay.
For Double T, Trent Tucker, for senior producer Brett Blakemore, I'm Dave Sinekin. Thank you for spending part of your Saturday morning with us. Please stay tuned. The debut of Fantasy Football Weekly is up next. Until then, have a wonderful week. Peace out.